Okay, good morning. Is it working?
Good morning. Oh,
are you hearing? Okay, very good. Good morning. We're so glad you all are here. I have the privilege of introducing Lee. I thought about this morning. I think Lee is the first person in this room. She's the first person I met when we first came to Sebring, because she and I were on staff at SIM together. And SIM is, of course, the mission, the place where a number of our missionaries live for retirees. Lee was the nurse on staff, and I was coming in working on staff as well. And I found out right away that Lee was somebody who was fun to be with. She loves to make people laugh. She's a wonderful nurse. She cares about not only the body, but the soul. And you'll see, I'm sure that's going to come out in her story. So I love being around her, and I'm sure you all know that you've had that same experience. She loves people, but she loves God even more. And so I am so excited to introduce to you Lee Warson, who's going to share her story with us this morning. So Lee.
Okay, now I have to live up to that. You know, I started this week feeling stressed out. Oh, neat. I have to share my story. And I like to stew about things and stress about things. And I decided, okay, God, I am not going to waste my whole week stressing out about this. So it's on you. I love to share my story. I love to share. And you will just give me the words I need to say. So I was free to get out in my yard and try to get it in shape before it gets mulched. Anyway, so as I think about my story, and I think all of us probably would come to these same conclusions, but here are two verses that are very true to me. Isaiah 55:8-9. My thoughts are nothing like your thoughts, says the Lord, and my ways are far beyond anything you could imagine. For just as the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways are higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than yours. And Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord. They are plans for good and not for disaster, to give you a future and a hope. Now, I think as we all reflect on our lifetimes of the going ups and the downs and the stresses that we have, if we know Jesus, we know He's in control. And that is the great comfort. So, my story began in June 10, 1949, I was born to John and Stina Warson in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I had an older sister who was 3 years older than me, Donna. And then 3 years later, my brother Dave was born. And 6 years later, my sister Isla was born. When I was in nurse's training, I asked my mom, well, okay, what kind of birth control did you use? Because how did we manage to get 3 years apart? She wouldn't tell me. I don't know why. Anyway, so I was blessed with a Christian home, and I went to church from before I was born and all the way through my life. I also had the privilege of going to Christian day school from kindergarten through high school. So I had a lot of Bible training and heard a lot of things about Jesus. So I had a good child life. We grew up in a neighborhood where everybody was basically Christian. And I remember summers I was running outside. I was outside all the time. You know, no shoes, barefoot, playing with my friends. We had the playground, which was had a great big sandbox, and we'd build cities in there, and then some neighbor boys would come and break it all up, you know. So the stresses started way back then. But anyway, my life was good. My mom was from a family of 10, and so I had 36 first cousins in my family, plus my dad's side, which he was the baby, and so they were all older, but totally I had almost 50 first cousins growing up. Now, that was a blessing because most of them lived in the Grand Rapids area, and I can remember summers where my aunts and my cousins, we would go camping, and the guys would work, and then they would come out for supper, and then go home again, and we had lots of good times. That was great. But also there was the thing of work. My dad was a worker, and my mom was the same. So when we were old enough to pick cherries, my mom and my aunt drove us to the cherry field, and we picked cherries. Now, they didn't stay. They'd pick us up later, and we picked cherries. Now, we didn't get too rich because it was two pennies per pound of cherries. So, and then after that blueberry season, and we went and picked blueberries. And the struggle was not to eat too many because I loved them. But anyway, so we were workers. My dad had his job. He worked at a Pine Rest Christian Hospital, which was a hospital for psychiatric issues, but then later he worked in a factory. But he had janitor jobs. He was the bank janitor, the dentist janitor, and the doctor's office janitor, and we did cleaning of the church. So my job with my mom was to clean the doctor's office. So we grew up working. When I was 16, my dad came home with a application and said, you can either be a nurse aide or a kitchen aide. So, of course, I was a nurse aide. So that was my life as a child. Now, when I was a senior in high school, we were studying comparative religions, and I was wondering, you know, well, how do I know the Bible's true? Because the Muslims believe the Quran is true. Now, how can I know? You know, I didn't really doubt it, but how did I know? And so at the same time, there was a team of Campus Crusade for Christ. They weren't all staff, some were volunteers, but they'd been in Europe, and there were one of the ladies was from our church. So we had two ladies stay at our house for the weekend. And traditionally, we always opened our meals with prayer. And my dad would often invite the visitor to pray. So Linda prayed. And when she prayed, it was like she was talking to a friend. And, you know, for me, prayer was, it didn't go above the ceiling. You know, and so that whole weekend, we heard stories about people's lives being changed, and I was really impacted by that. It's like their lives were changed, and so Sunday night we talked a long time with them, and when Donna and I went upstairs in our bedroom, I said, you know what? Those guys got something we don't have. And she says, I think so. I says, we've got to ask them. So, okay, winter, upstairs, no heat upstairs. Shivering, knocking on the door. Can we come and talk to you? And they, of course, invited me in. We jumped on the bed and we talked. And they shared basically the gospel. And I knew the gospel and I believed it. But they said, would you like to pray and receive Jesus as your Savior? And we said, of course, yes. And we prayed. And that was what I needed. Because even though I knew it all in my head and I believed it, but I hadn't received it as my own. And so they said, well, we want to tell you a secret. We thought you might be missing something. And we prayed that you'd come and ask. So, wow, it was a wonderful answer to their prayer and to my need. I got in bed that night, and I was giggling inside. Oh, man, good. And guess what? That question about how do I know that the Bible is true, that was no longer a question because I had the Holy Spirit. And he says, it's true. Don't worry about it. Okay. So I knew that I wanted to be a nurse for a long time. I watched Dr. Kildare, Dr. Ben Casey. I loved to go and visit to see my uncles and aunts when they were in the hospital. I loved being in the hospital. So no question, I went to Bronson Hospital School of Nursing, to the diploma program. And during that time, I was involved first with InterVarsity and with the idea of meeting other people, as i.e. from the other sex, to make friends, because we were all women in our group. And so, you know, when we divided, they'd say, for discussion, they'd say, okay, the Bronson nurses can go over there, and so-and-so can go there and there. And we said, you know, we don't want to meet with the Bronson nurses. We want to get to know other people. Oh, they didn't, you know, well, okay, that's no problem. So we did that. My next year, I was involved with Navigators and learned quiet, the benefit and the practice of quiet time and scripture memory. I went on the campus with fellow students and shared Christ. So those were two things that really built me in walking with the Lord and having a relationship with him. So I also had always been interested in missions. When our missionaries came and they shared, and most of our missionaries worked in Africa, and I thought, I would really like to do that, but I wasn't sure about snakes. I don't like snakes. So anyway, but when I finished with my nurse's training, I checked with our denominational mission board, and they said, you need to be a nurse midwife. I thought, I was just finishing school, and I really wasn't in the mood to go back to school, so I just got a job. And I worked in Grand Rapids, and I lived in an apartment with three other of our nurses, and we had a good time. I was there for about 4 years, and I was involved there with Campus Crusade high school staff, helping out with things there. I was involved in Bible studies and, you know, enjoying life. But my three roommates all got married, and I didn't. And so I was kind of, you know, okay, God, what do you want me to do? So I applied to go to Rehoboth Christian Hospital, which is in Gallup, New Mexico, and it works with the Navajo Indians. And I went there and worked for 2 years, and it was a 60-bed hospital, you know. It was a good time of learning to work in a small hospital, taking, you know, ER and ICU, and I remember having to start IVs, and I remember praying, Lord, help me get this in. No, you know, God answers all kinds of prayers. So, okay, so one of the good things was that I met Justin Harkema, who was the maintenance manager, and we got to know each other really well, and he liked to ski, and so did I, so we would drive. And there was another gal, we all liked to ski, so we would drive 4 hours to Durango, Colorado, and we would be in purgatory. So my thing that I tell people that you'll never know about me is that I learned to ski in purgatory. At purgatory. So, all right. So anyway, we had a wonderful time. Just also loves motorcycling. And he had a Honda 1000, so I learned how to sit on a Honda 1000. And we went to Arizona and lower part of New Mexico, Colorado, had great times. So I really, he loved the Lord. He was a widower. His wife and daughter were killed when they were on their way to Florida and they hit black ice. He was driving and they were killed. He had two sons, one my age and one 2 years younger. So he was 44 and I was 24. So we really loved each other. But he didn't want to have children again, go through that. But he didn't want me to miss out on the blessing of being a mother. So after a lot of prayer, we agreed that we would separate, and so I moved up to Denver. There was two other nurses that had worked in Gallup, New Mexico, that had moved up there. So I went up there, worked in the operating room, and soon found friends in church, and we did Bible studies, and I was involved in a lot. But I really, really liked to go hiking and backpacking and skiing. Those were the highlights of my time in Denver. And Justin, when he went with Operation Mobilization with Dulos. He went for a year, and he came back, and we still had a friendship. And he was telling me about the joys of seeing people come to Christ and what he was doing. And I said, that sounds so good. And he says, so Lee, why aren't you going out on the mission field? I couldn't answer that. So I prayed about it, and I decided, yes, I am willing to do that. So again, I called my mission board from my church, and they said, you need to have a degree in a college degree in order to get a work permit. I had a diploma. So no matter which way you looked at it, I needed to go back to school. So I went back to school and got my BSN in nursing. And just before I was ready to finish with that, a woman of great faith that I am, I wanted to check it out. I wanted to do a short term. So I did, I knew about SIM, I talked to a Bible college. Somebody, a friend of mine, was going to Bible college, and he brought me application. So I applied. And I wanted to go to, I applied to be a nurse in the clinic in Gaumee Hospital. And then I got a response saying they didn't need a nurse. Can you believe that? They're always needing nurses, but I didn't know that then. So I said, okay, I'm going to fill this out. I don't know where, but I'm going to fill it out. So I filled it out and the application, and they said, would you go to Liberia? And they saw that I was an OR nurse, and so they said, would you come and manage our operating room? Okay. So that's what I did. I came to Liberia, and really what they wanted was somebody to clean and organize it and make a catalog of where all the instruments were. And Dr. Young was there, and he says, so why did you want to come and work in the operating room? I says, I didn't. I wanted to work in the clinic. He says, well, how would you like to go and do community health? So I went for 10 days up country and worked with a nurse, and we went to a different village every day and did vaccinations and had vaccination clinics, and that was fun. That was good. I liked that. And so I was there only 2 months, and then I was debriefed with SIM, and SIM says, so what do you think? And I says, well, I really do feel God calling me to missions. And they said, okay, you need to go to Bible school. Bible school. Okay, I went for 12 years in a Christian school, but I needed to go to Bible school. So, okay, I didn't know where I wanted to go. So I went to Urbana with the question, Lord, show me which Bible school you want me to go to. And I don't know, do you know Urbana? Urbana is a student put on by InterVarsity and calling college-aged kids from all over the country, even outside the country, and they have mission, they have Bible studies, and they have a lot of mission agencies, Christian Bible schools, that all come and have a display so that you can go talk to them. So when I went, I was really impressed with Columbia Bible College and grad school. It's CIU now, which is Columbia International University. Those students were so excited about what God was teaching them about growing in Christ, and they have an emphasis on mission. So that's where I went. And, okay, so I'm going down to the south. All right, I'll go, because I'm a northerner. But anyway, so I went to Columbia, and it was really good. God needed me to be there. When we were in Old Testament survey, when the Israelites were going in to check out Canaan with the 10 spies, they came back and they said, those guys are too big. We can't do that. There's no way that we can fight them. Well, Dr. Holbert says, you know, that's the bottom line of sin, is that we don't think God is good or that he is going to do what he says he'll do. That was a dagger hit my heart. It was a dagger that hit my heart. And as I jogged that afternoon, I said, God, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but I don't think you're good. You haven't given me a husband. I've been following you all my life, and I want to be a wife. I want to have children. You haven't given me a husband. So I said, but you say you're good, and you say you don't lie. So I said, I need you to show me you're good. I want to know that you're good. So that was the year when we studied through the Bible. In grade school, you know, section here, section here, section here. But this was through the whole Bible. And I have to say that when I was in the prophets and the minor prophets, that that's where I saw the heart of God. I'm studying Isaiah now. And, you know, there's so many places where God says, I chose you. I chose you for my own. I created you. I created you to be in a relationship with me. I want to bless you. But you keep saying no. But he didn't give up. He kept on. And so in the end, I realized that, yeah, God, you are good. And I said, God, you are good. I can trust you. So it was so good there that I decided to stay and get an MA in missions for another year. And I don't remember, I was back in Denver and I was jogging, and I think it was after my second year, I was jogging and I was saying, you know, God, you're good, I agree, but you know, if I'm never going to get married, if you would just tell me so that I don't have to worry about and wonder when I see a guy, could that be the one? You know, so you know what I heard? He said, it's not going to happen for a long, long, long time. And I had instant peace. I said, okay. He says, go and do what I'm showing you to do. So, there, okay. I'm good to go. So then I went back to Liberia. I was doing community health. So, of course, we studied language. And then we started a community health outreach. We were starting in a new area. And we didn't have a house. They were building a mud brick house with a zinc roof. And I remember thinking, it's not going to be big enough. But some wise missionary says, it'll be bigger when the walls get up, you'll notice. Okay, so during that time, during language study, we were on Firestone Plantation, and I lived with another couple and with another single during our language study. And living in that situation, I'd been living alone as a single, and living together with the couple, the husband wasn't convinced that language was necessary. And so, you know, it was not easy. But, you know, God called me here. So we always have spiritual life conferences every year, which is a really good thing for us as missionaries. And so I don't know if it was the first, I think it was the second year, we had a guy who came from New Zealand, and he said, life isn't fair. The sooner you accept that, the better off you are. So he says, but, and you cannot control your circumstances. They happen. But you can control your attitude. And your attitude determines how you're going to respond to your circumstances. Did I need that? Whoa, did I ever need that? I've been preaching that ever since. And that was like 87. So, yes, I have to change. I have to control my attitude, knowing that God's in control. So that was what I needed to learn. Okay, my plan was to live in Liberia the rest of my life. I was giving my life, and that Liberia was God's chosen place. And so when we were looking at furniture, I didn't really want to have the leftover stuff that missionaries were trying to get rid of. I wanted to have a house, a nice house. So I had couch and chairs made, and dining table and bed, and I had it all made. And of course, you know, I was still waiting for my house, but the house finally got done. And so I got up there 6 months before the end of my first term. So I was up there, and it was really nice. And it was big enough. No problem. And it was just nice. And we were up there. Now, when we were setting up, before we had our house, we would go into the village Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And so we slept in the village two nights. And there was a good house that had a good, you know, a good bed. And so then we would go to the villages. So that was part of our thing. So then, okay, I got living up there. Then I went home on furlough for 7 months. And while I was home, I was getting all my stuff together. I knew I could have electricity. And so I got a washer and a dryer, and I got a stove that you set on top of the counter, and my mom braided rugs, she does that, and I had placemats made, and I was getting all kinds of stuff to bring to make my house my home. And so those went out to the container in February, and I was glad to be rid of them. Packing those boxes was a lot of work. Those of you who have been missionaries know that. And now, in January, in December of 89, there was an incursion of rebels coming into Liberia. But we were told that's way in the north, it's no problem, you can come. So in March, I came. And I got in my house, and it was really nice to be there. I was ready to begin a second term of getting going. And but we were there like 6 weeks, and the mission decided we couldn't stay there because on that road was an army camp, and the rebels were going to be coming toward that. And so it wasn't safe. So we needed to move to Monrovia, where we have a hospital, where we have a radio, and so we went there. My boxes hadn't arrived yet, so I ended in the end of May flying home because everybody was leaving. And when I got home, I heard that my boxes had arrived, because there were people that stayed, because we had a hospital, and there were 30,000 people. Was it that one? Or was that the second one?
25.
Okay. Anyway, so I left. My boxes arrived. And I ended up staying home until, I think it was February of the next year. And Moni Modis and I flew together. Ben had already gone. And I had said right away, I was going to go back. I wanted to go back. So we went back, and we were confined to Monrovia, and all the people had been there. They had tarps on hanging from the overhangs, and the Elwha campus is on the ocean. It's a beautiful place with palm trees and wonderful. It was always good to come down there. But this time, they had cut down every palm tree because the heart of the palm gives food. So the palm trunks were laying on the road. Everything was a mess, disaster, discouraging. I had a list of 5 or 6 D's that it was not good. So what we did was Moni would go through the houses and clean up, because the trash, they had ransacked everything that we had hidden was unhidden. It was all on the floor. So Moni went there, and Marianne Otzbach, who's a German, came as well to work with us. And so we were the nurses, and the clinic was open, but there weren't that many people coming, and so we would divide, and the first one day we would be a clinician working in the clinic. The other day we would be a clinician going through the hospital, the lab, everywhere where everything was ransacked. So people were really happy to have us back, and they were so glad when the radio got back on. And we worked. So it was good. I mean, we were kind of in our own little bubble working. The rebels were up country, still war going on. But we were in our bubble of safety, and we did what work God gave us to do. Good memories of that time are Pele ladies. I studied Pele, and some of the people from one of our villages were down, displaced in Monrovia. And so Donna Welch, some of you don't know her, and I and another lady, Libby Munchmore, we worked with three ladies they were illiterate, and they were trying to learn Pali. So we worked through all the boxes of sounds, and you know, we really worked hard, and they finally got it. And I remember reading Wille Doon. Once they got done with the Isa book, then we gave them a Pali Bible. And she was reading in there, and she went, "Oh!" I says, "What's wrong?" She says, "I've always heard it with my ear, but now I can read it with my eye." Wonderful. Literacy is so important, where people can read the Bible. And so, they got to go back. And the law was, we teach you, you need to teach somebody else. So there were three of them that went back, and we sent them with the vocabulary, learning the sounds, and the Yisa book, and the Pali Bible. We said, okay, go to it. And I think it was a year later, we finally felt safe to go up there. And the guy, Leidun's husband, was a pastor. And so we were in his village, and they had rice and soup, and everybody was so happy. Finally, the missionaries were there. But afterwards, they had about five ladies sitting in a circle, and the five ladies all read from the Bible. So those ladies had work. So our work was multiplied, and that, I think that Pali literacy is still going on. So that is really a good thing. I think I really got to go faster. The hard thing was that during that time, my mother died. She was killed in a car accident. But the year before, she died in 93, 92, I was home. And they were driving me to Detroit. All kinds of road work. It was in August. And when we got to Detroit, there were all kinds of exchange students checking into, and so the line was really long. We were all uptight and irritated with each other, and you know, it wasn't too good. And so when I finally got checked in, my dad said, "We got to find some place to eat." I said, "Dad, I can't. It's time to load right now to board." So I hurried off, and I said bye, hugged him bye, and then I got on the plane. I thought, this is really a bad way to leave your parents. It was not good. But, you know, we didn't have a phone because of the war, blah, blah, blah. Okay, finally in March, we got a phone, and it was up by the church, and spontaneously I said, "I got to call home." So I called. I couldn't remember my dad and mom's number because they had moved. But I remembered my sister Isla's number. And so I called her. And I says, "Hi, this is Lee." "Oh, wow." And I think their phone hadn't been working, but it was now. And so I said, they said, "Dad and Mom are here." And so I talked to Mom. I had a good conversation. I said, "I love you." And they were going to leave the next day to go to Louisiana to do relief work. And so we made an appointment that they would call me on the Sunday after they got back. But then I got a phone call on Friday that she had died, had been killed. So I really see that as God's gift to me, that I could have a memory of a good conversation with my mom. So, it was good. Now, also during that time, one night I had five fighters come to my house. They were in Monrovia, stealing cars. I'd worked in the ER all night. because they don't know how to drive cars, and so they got in accidents. And so I saw them driving past my house, and and I sat up, and I thought, uh-oh, this is trouble. I put on my robe, and they came to the door, pounding on the door, and they said, open up. And I said, no way. You first tell me what you want. I says, open up. No, you tell me what you want. And so one guy hit the window with his gun. Open up or I'll shoot. Okay, I got it. So I opened up my door. I had my keys in my hand. And so they rushed in. They wanted my U.S. cash. That's what they wanted. I didn't have U.S. cash because we didn't keep it there. Although I knew in my purse that I had a $20 bill. But we had painted in my room, and I wasn't sure where it was. So I had an extra bedroom. I was looking there, and I had a bunch of boxes of used clothes that had been sent. We were given to refugees or people when they came back from behind the line. And so I was busy looking in my closet, and they were back there. And I turned around, and I had a really nice gold necklace. And a guy saw it. He came at me with his gun. And he grabbed my necklace. I hurried up and put my hands behind my back because I had rings and I didn't want to lose those. And just like that, they were gone. Huh. I could spit cotton. And my legs were trembling. But they had ransacked everything. So, what to do? That's life. Okay, I got to fast forward. And then we left again in 92. I went to Ivory Coast, and then we came back and worked. And then in 96, they were coming back again. Oh, wait. Maybe that was when the fighters came in in 96. Anyway, so then we were called and said they're coming with a convoy from the U.S. embassy to take you out, to get you out. So we had about 20 minutes to hurry up and pack and go. And as we drove, we had to drive off the road for a while. I was in the car with Carol, and they were fighting, and so we had to wait. And Steve had stayed behind. There were three guys that stayed behind, and it was kind of scary. But we got into a field, and we thought we were going to leave right away. The helicopters that were going to get us out had been called from North Africa, and they were flying down, and they needed to rest before they could come and get us. So, we were refugees. Did I think to take food with me? No. But there were people from our mission that came with food. So we stayed overnight, and the next morning I said, I bet, you know, probably be 10 o'clock before they come. Well, they didn't come until the afternoon. And then I gave up my seat for a British gal who was with YWAM, and they had gone through a really hard time, and her coworker was an American, and they were taking Americans out first. And I thought, she has got to go with her. And so I talked to the ones making the plans, and they says, well, we can't do that. And I says, well, you know, I want to. And he says, okay, I'll do it, but I don't know anything about it in case somebody would get after him. So they all left, and then we were told that it would be the next day before we would get out. Okay, but they did come. And the reason, part of the reason that I wanted to stay was that we had British workers and a German doctor that were my friends. And because they weren't U.S. citizens, they weren't getting out. And I was not going to leave if they didn't leave. So, but then we all did leave, and we ended up going to Dakar. first into Freetown, got into a military transport plane, and to the car. So I didn't want to go home, so I went to, my passport had been stolen. I went over to Abidjan, and I was going to work there. But in the end, I came home too, because, yeah, it was looking like we wouldn't go back. And those guys, those three guys got out, and they had a story. And I said, I have got to go to the airport. They got to Abidjan. I've got to go see these guys. They're my, you know, they're my family. And so we talked to them, and yeah. Anyway, so what's next? That's the good question. What am I going to do now? 96, no place to go, and I got to hurry. And so I was sitting there, and I was going to go do refugee work in Abidjan, but it's a French-speaking country, and I don't learn French by hearing it. I have to study it. So I sat there, and I says, God, how long is a long time? I'm ready for a husband. Guess what? I'm still single. So, anyway, that's okay. That's good. I mean, God has given me a wonderful life. Can you believe that's a wonderful life, all this trouble? But it was, because God was with me every way. And so I went to do French study, and that was a lonely time for me because I was living with Madame Savar, and she was a busy lady. I thought I was going to be able to talk with her a lot, but she wasn't home a lot. So it was hard, but you know, I made good progress. I was amazed at all the snow. And I came in January, and I was quite impressed with their snow removal that they have there. Then I went to Ivory Coast, and we worked there. But the refugees were starting to go back. And because I studied French, I wanted to use my French. So I went to Benin, which is a French-speaking country. And I was going to replace a Beninois nurse who was going to go for more education. So that I went there. Trouble was that the country where he was going to go was at war, and so he didn't leave. And so I worked with him, and I worked in the hospital. The next term, I got acquainted with Fulani people. And I liked the Fulani because they wore blue, and blue's my favorite color. But really, they were fun to care for. I could tell you lots of stories about what happened in the hospital, but I don't have time. And so then I felt I was invited that I could come to Simperu and work with the Fulani. There was a team working with the Fulani, and I could do community health. So, okay, that's what I did. I was home on furlough 7 months. And then just before I came back, they said, I called the person. I emailed her, I think. She says, well, I'm sorry, but, we're not there anymore. We're in Paracu doing administration. And, okay, so I was going to be working with no team. There was another nurse there, but she was all about the clinic, and she told her people that I wouldn't be working in the clinic. I would be doing community health, and I'm not a one-man person. I mean, I can't do it. I'm a team person. That was really too much. And I stayed and studied language, but I went home after a year or so, and with a heavy heart. And I was crying inside. Have you ever cried inside? And you wonder, why am I crying? And I didn't know why I was crying. Why was I crying? Look at all happened to me. But why was I crying? So I decided I needed counseling. So I went home, and I went to Charlotte and did counseling. And it was looked at success and failure. We did grieving because there were a lot of people that I knew that had died, and looked at grieving and how, you know, that. And in the end, I did a lot of reading and praying, Lord, show me, show me. And in the end, I wrote in my journal, and I said, I'm so glad you let me fall in this pit, because you've reached down and pulled me up with your arms into your love. And I was about being good enough. I was never good enough to really volunteer for things. If I didn't know I could do it, I wasn't going to volunteer, because I didn't want to fail. That was a big part. And here I was, a missionary. But this was something that was in me. And anyway, God showed me his loving kindness, and that his loving kindness is unconditional. There is nothing I can do to gain it. There's nothing I can do to lose it. I knew that in my head. I knew that. But I didn't know it in my heart. I had lies in my head that I wasn't good enough. That was Satan's lies. And God needed to get rid of those lies for me, because they were keeping me from doing what he wanted me to do. So I said, I am so thankful that you have shown me your love. And now it's so good to go out with a heart full of love to minister, to bless other people, rather than going out to minister with an empty heart to try to fill my own heart because I don't have enough. So that was a watershed for me. A watershed. So, okay, then I come to Sebring to visit. And Garth Windsor heard that I didn't know what I was going to do next. Well, of course, this was a recruiting opportunity. So before I left, he wanted to talk to me. And I said, well, you know, it's really a nice place, but I really want to go back overseas. I loved working overseas. And I said, but I could come for 6 months and fill in after I talked to all my churches. If I was looking at going to Nigeria to work with AIDS, and that wasn't a done deal, because they had somebody else who was supposed to come. So, okay, so it ended up that I came in July of 2004, 3 weeks before the first of three hurricanes came through here. Ha! I was told hurricanes don't come here. Ha! Anyway, I said, okay, I've been through a war. I've been through a hurricane. Now what? Anyway, but it was so good, because it was like Psalm 23 to me, that God, these were the green pastures, and God was still restoring my soul. It felt so good. It felt good to be appreciated. And it was fun to work through those hurricanes. After we were done, I said to Garth, well, I'm ready for another hurricane. He about hit me. Anyway, but so that I decided that I would like to stay here for a year. So, and of course, Garth was in agreement with that. And so we let Nigeria know, and they said, okay, that's fine. And so I worked, but 6 months were gone, and they sent me a job description of what I would be doing, and tell us when you're coming. And I really wanted to do that, but I didn't have any peace. I didn't have peace. And I knew that if I didn't have peace, if I went there because I wanted to go there and it wasn't God's direction, then I didn't have peace. And I've already been in a war, so I decided I needed to have his peace, and he didn't give it. So I agreed and said, okay, I'll stay. And I was told, well, that's a win-win situation. We'll get you back overseas. Yeah, right. Anyway, so I decided to work here. And Garth was very happy, and I was very happy. But he had said, when he showed me the place that I was going to live for 6 months, he says, okay, if you decide to stay full-time, we will remodel this for you. I said, oh, I didn't think that we were supposed to use bribery. But anyway, so when I agreed to stay, I says, okay, I'm ready for that remodel. And he says, so I suppose you want another bedroom added, because I'd asked about two bedrooms. I said, well, that'd be nice. He says, well, they won't do it. Unless you buy it as your retirement home. I'm 55. Am I thinking about retirement? No. But as I thought about it, I said, okay, I prayed about it, and I ended up having it remodeled. And so I was basically saying, and I knew, okay, this is where God has me. And this is what he wants. You know, I'm not going to go overseas again, because language was my trouble. And I believe, I like to talk heart to heart, and you can't talk heart to heart through a translator. And so that was out for me. I have hearing aids. So that's that. Okay, so I didn't then, but I do now. And so what did... I lost my thought. This is an old lady thing. Okay, the good thing about being able to stay was that I totally enjoyed the work. I coming alongside people, helping them, doing skin tears, picking people up in the middle of the night off the floor. You know, we did it all. But it was what we're here to do. And I often jokingly say, I'm really a good missionary, because everybody I worked with goes to heaven. And truthfully, when you're on mission field, not everybody believes. But all these people who die go to heaven. While I was there 15 years, 150 went home. We averaged about 10 per year. And but I'm not a really good nurse, because everybody I work with dies. So that's not really good. But the main thing is that they go to heaven. So, okay, now I'm retiring. And I think, man, what am I going to do? You know, I'm not married. I mean, I saw retirement as traveling with your husband, loving on your grandkids. And I didn't have either one. And I said, God said to me, well, Lee, haven't I been good to you? Yeah. He says, I haven't changed. Yeah, I know. So what he showed me was that Samaritan's Purse Disaster Relief. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought relief work was always about couples, because my parents did couples. Everybody went as couples. And so I went to, with Michael, what's the city? I can't think. Panama City. Panama City. I went there, and there were over 160 volunteers there, and they, there were a lot of women. Well, and when you go there, they find a church with a large education wing, and they use the classrooms as dorms. So all the women sleep in, and all the men sleep in other ones. So I was with all the women, and there were couples, but I got to know people, and it was just so much fun. God has given me a healthy body. I know that's not going to last. I've watched people come in. Anyway, I didn't drink that. Anyway, I've watched people come in good health, and something hits them, and down they go, and up they go. And up they go is really good. But none of us, we are all going to die. We don't know how, and that's what scares us. But we know where we're going. And so... Okay, I lost my thought. I have good health. And I know that's not going to last. But as long as I have good health, I am going to live my life to the fullest and trust that God will give me the grace when I have to sit down. Now, I have chosen as my mantra for retirement is choose joy. Because there are a lot of difficulties that come, but I'm going to choose joy. You know, God created us for himself. And the chief end of man is to glorify him and to enjoy him forever. And that just hits me right here. That's what it is. How do we enjoy God? Obedience, trusting, spending time in the Word, fellowshipping. That's how we enjoy God. And glorifying him is just letting Christ shine through us. So that's really good. And another thing is that God is most glorified by those who are most satisfied in him. So when we have God as our satisfaction. Yes, now I'm not going to say I don't have struggles. And when I struggle. But the bottom line is I know that God is who he is and he's all for me and I want to honor him in what I do. So that's my story and I'm going to stick to it. And I really, you know, one thing I love about Samaritan's Purse is the opportunity to share with homeowners but also with other volunteers. This past year, there were two of the volunteers that came to Christ. They came to help. One was from a Catholic background, but she had lots of burdens, and so a chaplain talked with her, shared the steps to peace, and she came home. I didn't work on the same team. We were in the same room, and she said, I saw a Bible. We always give a Billy Graham study Bible to every homeowner when we're done. And she, because she prayed to receive Christ, they gave her one. And so I saw that in the room and I thought, well, what's going on? So when she came in, she says, Lee, I received Jesus today. She says, it's like a burden rolled off my shoulders. And so I talked to her a lot the rest of the week about walking with the Lord and stuff. So those are the fun things that we have. I just enjoy that. So that's why I said, so why are you worried about sharing? Because I share all the time when I'm with the volunteers. I talk to college-age kids there. I talk to them about my struggle with singleness because, you know, I just tell them. And you know, I have people come up to me and say, thanks so much, that really helps me. So, and that's what the joy is helping people to walk in the Lord. So, thank you.